With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is TNT, today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. We are live and direct, 2 hours of news and analysis with the depth that you will not get anywhere else, and also with the details. And the devil is always in the details, and that's why we do implore our listeners to also read 21stCenturyWire.com. We're also posting a lot of featured interviews there. But there's another interesting story that I think we need to touch. And whenever there's a journalist that's being targeted by the governments in the West, it's normally because they're telling the truth. It's never because they're lying or whatever. So one of the investigative journalists is Kit Clarenberg, who currently writes for a number of media outlets, but also the Gray Zone. They're based in Washington, D.C. They're an independent media outlet, Max Blumenthal and others, Aaron Maté. They have some very good people working there as well. And so Kit Clarenberg has done a number of very impactful pieces for them. He's been detained by the British authorities when he was coming back to visit friends and family in Britain. They're waiting for him as he got off the plane, and they detained him under the terrorism legislation. So treating him like a terrorist, he was approached by six plainclothes counterterrorism officers, Luton Airport in London, North London. And he's coming back from Belgrade, apparently lives in Belgrade at the moment, comes back. And of course, there's 5 hours of interrogation. And they also say, if you don't give up your passwords, this is the new thing now. If you don't give up your passwords to your phone, your devices, then you'll be jailed, basically. So they want to hack and, or, you know, basically copy all the information off of your computers and so forth. And so that's what they're, that's basically what they're doing. So this is what they do. This is what they do. Unbelievable. So there you are, ladies and gentlemen, Kit Clarenberg. So he's, well, they've run this story at the Gray Zone, and his fingerprints, DNA, many photographs, 5 hour interrogation about his political views. They want to know, and they got, it's so funny because they largely don't really know what they're talking about. So getting all these things like, you know, seeing if he's, you know, what are your views on British politics? Do you support the British leader and all this other stuff? So it, again, they're treating it like it's they're at war. They claim they're not at war, but they are at war. You see, why don't they just come out and say it? Why don't they just come out and say it? Why not come out and be honest and say, we're at war and we're antagonizing Russia. We want a nuclear exchange. We want to see Europe in the toilet. Why doesn't the British government just be honest? We want to see Germany and Europe in the toilet. And we have the United States behind us. So basically go pound sand, just be honest. So they're grabbing journalists. So this shouldn't shock anybody, of course, because Kit Clarenberg, although he's a great journalist, he's done some really impactful stuff. A lot of it's from hacked emails. It was the question of, you know, where he's getting the emails. Okay, that's up for speculation. The British government thinks that it's Russian hacking, giving it to him. So they asked the Gray Zone if they have some agreement with the Russian FSB to for them to provide the Gray Zone with hacked emails. I mean, I can't believe I'm reading this. So they're just like leading questions. But it's hugely embarrassing what he's published. And he's exposed a lot of really interesting and important scandals, but it's not super heavyweight. It's not like leaking state secrets or anything like that. It's basically he's exposed all these shenanigans of all these political operators who are like masquerading as activists and anti-Brexit activists and so forth. People like Paul Mason. As sort of intelligence assets. So, I mean, it's all it's pretty factual and everybody's sort of figured it out. So he sort of ruined the party. But again, the you know, persecution and the bullying and intimidation of journalists who are basically exposing all the shenanigans of government, which they really shouldn't need to do, but they do regularly because it's just, it seems to be like, you know, it's a dirty business and we need to, you know, deceive the public and hype up the Russian threat. For years, they've been doing this. And then finally, this Ukraine situation rolls around last February, and it's almost like it, you know, absolves the deep state of all of its past transgressions and sins, saying, oh, it was all worth it because look how aggressive Russia is now. We were right all the time. You see, circular logic, circular reasoning. It's called a logical fallacy. This is where the heads of these people basically are at. So again, not a surprise. Why am I not surprised? Well, one of the most famous journalists in the world, award-winning journalist, a pioneer, a groundbreaking journalist, you know, reinvented, revolutionized digital online publications with WikiLeaks. His name is Julian Assange. He exposed U.S. war crimes in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and other places. And for that, he has been held in a supermax prison in southeast London, unconvicted prisoner for years. He's been in arbitrary detention, including the time in the Ecuadorian embassy now for, I don't know, going on 12 years. Okay. That's according to the UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, Nils Melzer. Okay. But in the supermax since April 2019. For what? Exposing war crimes. So the guy that exposes the war crimes goes into prison, unconvicted, indefinitely. And for what? Britain's keeping him on ice so the U.S. can extradite him. For a fake charges of espionage, completely fake, saying that he helped Bradley Manning hack U.S. Military servers or whatever to get material to send to WikiLeaks. Not true. Anyway, it was completely debunked in the trial in U.S. or in the British Woolwich Crown Court. Yeah, the hearings before COVID. All these claims of all these indictments that the U.S. DOJ made against Assange, Trump's DOJ, by the way, all debunked by Assange's defense, but they just go ahead and do it anyway. There's no merit to the case, you see. 170 years, ridiculous. So if they'll do that to Julian Assange, they deem him to be that much of a threat. They deem the truth to be that much of a threat. Then who is Kit Clarenberg to them? Nothing, just someone to harass because they don't like. Instead of looking at the actual report and saying, yeah, this looks really bad. You know, maybe we shouldn't be running these sort of ops because these journalists are picked up on it. They publish this amazing story, makes the government look bad. The reason it makes the government look bad is because the government is bad in this case and other cases. And that's the whole point of journalism. It's to expose government corruption. It's to speak truth to power. It's not to be a mouthpiece for power. That's propaganda. You know, that's Stalinist media. To regurgitate government statements and government talking points and government lies. That's not journalism. That's not Fourth Estate. That's not any kind of free press. That's not a component of a democracy. It's a feature of an authoritarian fascist government that's trying to close society, not open it. See, they can't handle the information sphere globally. They can't handle it. It's too much. There's too much competing information that's making the Five Eyes and the G7 countries look bad because they don't have a moral leg to stand on. Their foreign policy makes no sense. They're running protection rackets, you know, extorting countries, intimidating. Just this neocolonialism, rapacious rape, plunder, and just high theft, but doing it under the guise of NATO, a defensive alliance. It's not a defensive alliance. Who do you think you're fooling? Seriously, who do you think you're fooling? You're only fooling yourself if you actually believe that. But sadly, there's a lot of people in the system that believe all this stuff. Why? Well, you know, narrow-minded. But you have to be narrow-minded to be in these positions. See, the system relies on the narrow-mindedness. Everything's compartmentalized. You are a horse with blinders on. You stay on the path, you move forward. You'll be fed and watered and compensated for your obedience and your loyalty to the state. And of course, loyalty to secrecy of the deep state. And all of your problems will be taken care of in life. Well, that's the sales pitch, isn't it, anyway? But is it true? Hardly. Hardly. Because you end up on the wrong side of history again and again and again. And one time, that's going to be the real fatal blow. And I think the fatal blow, the death of the Occidental world is underway. And Ukraine is the trap which they set for themselves. The trap which the West have set for themselves. It's clear to see. It's clear as day. Anybody who looks at it can see it. Anybody with eyes to see, anybody with ears to hear, it's pretty obvious. You have to be in real fantasy land not to see it. You have to be so ensconced in your own sort of private dream world, your own sort of illusion, not to see it. And yet so many don't see it. What does that tell you about our society? What does that tell you where Western civilization is right now? It is at a very low ebb, indeed. A very low ebb. To pull back from the precipice is going to take a huge effort by anybody willing to step up and own the truth. And you're going to have to set a lot of people straight, and it's going to be a painful process, ladies and gentlemen. But not painful for you. If you really are dedicated to the pursuit of the truth, it's not going to be painful for you. It's going to be invigorating, exhilarating, and will give you purpose. But for those who trade in lies, whose currency is propaganda, deception, who operate as gaslighters and disruptors, the narrow-minded ones with the blinders on, those horses, workhorses, it's going to be very difficult for them to accept reality. Oh, but when it arrives, it's going to come crashing down pretty hard. And that's happening right now in Ukraine. It really is. It really is. Let's take a break here with TNT, Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. We'll be right back with our research assistant for the show, Christian James. Looking forward to this and much, much more. So stick around. We'll be right back.
You should hear what Charlie Robinson is talking about.
I know we're going to talk about health because it's probably the most important component that we're dealing with out there. What is your obsession with getting great doctors on your show? It seems that you've turned into more of a medical show than anything these days.
Health was one of those things where, you know, I became a gym rat, and a little bit was to boost confidence, right? And then as you get older, cosmetically, it doesn't become quite as important, but it, you know, for mental health and just, you know, wanting to be around for your kids and all these things, like health has always, the diet, nutrition, and health has always been like really important to me. And when you start uncovering, you know, stories about like doctors that were curing people of cancer and they were suppressed, you know, Dr. Brzezinski was one of the first big doctors that were on my show in like 2013, 2014. And, you know, this guy was considered a medical genius. And then once he found this thing called antineoplastones, which was showing success in curing people of cancer, all of a sudden he became pseudoscience, you know, and all of a sudden he started getting by the FDA. And, you know, you watch these documentaries of these people who were healed by his treatment, and it pulls at your heartstrings.
Charlie Robinson on TNT Radio.
When you can point me to an industry, to a platform that reaches 250 million people a month, virtually 9 out of 10 Americans, that's real, that's substantive, that's important. And that reach and that touch point and that daily reinforcement, it's an amazing place to be able to communicate messages. That's massive.
To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
with a compelling perspective on global politics. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Welcome back to TNT Today's News Talk. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show. We're in hour number two of this live broadcast, and we've got a lot of ground to cover. There's a lot more going on in the world. Let's take the pivot away from international geopolitics and talks of World War III, talk of war, talk of rumors of war. And we'll come back a little bit closer to home. I'm going to welcome onto the program our research assistant for the show, Christian James, joining us on the line right now. Hello, Christian.
How you doing, Patrick? How are you doing today?
Very well indeed. Very well indeed. We're just sort of perusing the smorgasbord of breaking news stories, and there's a lot of interesting stuff going on. We thought we'd kick it over to you to see what you think we need to be paying attention to.
Oh man, dude! If you just the smorgasbord, I actually really like that phrase, because I guess the news right now, it really is an absolute splattering against the wall of stuff. I mean, I think right now a really interesting perspective is to have is to think about the terrible situation that the British media corporations are finding themselves in this week. The big guns, as it were, ITN or ITV rather, has now found itself to be at the scramble of the Philip Schofield night continuing saga there. So you've got this guy who is in the Broom Club and presenter with a gopher, and now he's obviously rose to prominence throughout the BBC and ITV, becoming untouchable. And now he's got a bit of a scandal going on with his long-term relationship with a work colleague, potentially a young man. But what I really thought was interesting about this, which is not being covered, in fact, is how it obviously has the similarity to other popular children's and entertainment characters in the UK that we've had over the last few decades or so, such as the Savile and the Rolf Harris situation, but their orbit to the royals and their ability to control the narrative, their popularity, they have a high price tag. It means those around them kind of know and embrace, and they're willing to turn a bit of a blind eye to things. And there's been a massive public reaction. If you're in the UK, this particularly this week, every newspaper is this. This is what the focus is. This is the whole smokescreen of the news right now. It's kind of been obfuscated by this particular topic. And I always find it interesting to see what other organizations can get away with while these things are going on. So with their particular situation, it shows that the media, certainly some of ITV, is willing to turn a blind eye to things. In the UK, for those who don't know, you have the BBC, you have ITV, which also produces ITN, which is the ITN News. They are the news producer for Channel 4 and Channel 5. So they produce what effectively is most people's tea time news view. So when it comes to the perspective of news that people have, they see the BBC generally speaking, or they see the ITV and ITN News. But what they are faced with right now is they know now that for a long time that the BBC often is giving people a misdirection, a bit of a resentful lie to. But now they're finding that ITV has also done the same thing. So the trust narrative in terms of what the people are seeing is now giving a perspective to people who are losing. They're now losing trust in their media. And I think that actually speaks to guys like TNT, the other international news outlets, the alternative news. They right now, I bet their numbers are going up because people want to see what's going on in the news. They want to see what the real truth is outside of the narrative control. And I saw Katie Hopkins replying earlier about the very topic. There's a bidding war going on for this lad's story, going on behind the scenes, and now that is dominating the politics of the news behind it. So what is going on in terms of the news? Like you said, you hit it. Obviously, we've got the Ukraine situation that is now going up, but we wanted to kind of come away from that topic, as I heard you say. One really worrying story that kind of caught my eye, and I did plug it towards your way, Patrick, was certainly a sci-tech conversation. So science and technology, where things get a bit dark, where things are getting a bit murky at the moment, that whole Black Mirror kind of near future tech that scares like the living bejesus out of us because we know how close it is. There was a report posted this week going out into Nature and their scientific reports of a deep learning technology that has the ability to predict the ideology from facial expressions, from photographs and beauty, and what people's political ideologies are just from photographs and video. And this it comes out of a Danish study. of more than 3,000 individuals. This particular AI algorithm model was found with a high accuracy of 61% to find out which political orientation people are orientating themselves towards in terms of their voting, and just from photographs. And this likely is more than likely now going to move into video as part of this development of this technology. It's found that the neural network possibility that they have developed, they found a 61% accuracy with their answers, what they put out there. They also were looking at neutrality versus happiness, attractiveness, what people find. They're not just their political ideology, but also their personality, their intelligence, their sexual orientation, their psychological characteristics. These are really the things that the alternative media and certainly science fiction has been predicting will happen. And we are now certainly at a point where science has caught up to this point. And this kind of technology is finally being pushed into the technology that is going to be, perhaps the next 5 years, the major battle route of where freedom and policy and, you know, the kind of things that we hold value to ourselves. I mean, most people don't even talk about their political views in amongst each other sometimes because they don't want to cause a rift or an argument around the dinner table. But this technology, potentially, with the success that it's having, I assume that there's going to be a big investment into this technology as it rolls out towards the future. Have you been catching an eye on this technology, Patrick?
Well, I'm not surprised that they're going in this direction, but it's sort of like, you know, leaving that up to an algorithm to decide, you know, what a person's political viewpoints are. And when I think of what would the state's application be for this, well, it's kind of obvious. They're looking for the types of people who hold political views or positions which are not in line with the government or not in line with whatever the social engineering agenda is. So, of course, right, far right, that'll be the sort of, you know, the beginning of it. And then, you know, if they're rabid socialists, you know, socialist workers types or anarchists, they'll want to sort of profile them. And it's kind of like pre-crime. So it'll, like, you know, jack up their sort of, you know, social credit risk or whatever. But I can kind of see this sort of thing being rolled out by police. And it's kind of insidious, the whole concept of it, because it's like the computer can say that you're suspicious, even though you haven't opened your mouth. And I'm looking at that 61% number, Christian, and I'm like, I'm not that impressed with that because it's just over it's just over 50%. So it's like, okay, I really look at that as 11% effective, because if it's 50%, then that's 50-50. So it just could just as easily be guessing, but
by chance, yeah.
But still not high enough. And even if it was 70, or if it was 80, or something like that, you know, it's kind of frightening that the state would even be developing such a thing, you know, on that basis. And then if they develop it on that, Christian, what else can they use it for?
Well, it appears to have been done during the 2017 municipal elections. They were provided by the Danish Broadcasting Corporation. So what they did there is they took those politicians and they used them as their, what was their political views? What was their motivation? What was their stances? And they used them to basically train their AI to do this. And there was like a data set of 5,230. And what comes out of this, there's a few weird things as well. Females weren't as easily able to be identified. Those who had darker complexions, those who had black skin, also were taken out of the algorithm. Those who were bearded were also taken out of the algorithm, because those, apparently if the AI finds it really difficult to process. They also found that people from who had darker skin were more likely to vote left. So they were taken out of it. So their political ideology wasn't mixed into the data. But it'll be interesting to see it's racially profiling white people, and who are they going to vote for? Where are they going to lean? What's their motivation? Like you said, pre-crime is certainly one of the things they want to put on the table. You can be arrested because you might be one of those, or you might find yourself on a list just because you look like one of those people. Oh, wait, you're on a database over here as well because you've expressed this view on social media. We'll put them together and make you a profile, and they'll be tracking after you that way. I mean, this is an interesting way to profile people that certainly makes those lists dangerous.
Well, yeah, if you go against the woke agenda in America, you're called a white supremacist, among other things. So black Black Americans, African Americans that go against, that are, say, conservative, right? There's quite a few of them now. Some of them are called white supremacists by the kind of, you know, left-wing virtue signaling brigading machine. They call them white supremacists. Like Larry Elder ran for governor in California and he was called white supremacist. So it's kind of ridiculous. Candace Owens, a white supremacist. It's interesting what you said, Christian, because if the algorithm and the AI have already worked out through just basic demographic polling, that everybody already knows that people with darker skins will tend to vote liberal, left, Democrat, labor, right, not conservative, just as a majority. So there's the crazy thing and kind of the insidious thing about that is that they're already putting them into that category. So the AI is concerned with solving the problem of figuring out what the white person thinks. So it's just, and that's kind of crazy, the reversal of that. And then trying to work out where the dissidents are, right? Against, because what else would the state be measuring against? Of course, it's whatever the state policy, agenda, whatever the lingua franca of the state is at that time. They want to separate the wheat from the chaff among that sort of white population in the West to see where the dissidents are. The thing that would really screw them up is when more Black or Latino people become conservative or more Asians become conservative. Then things really get screwed up for this computer. If it's, because it's also probably feeding in other data, not just facial data. Probably, you know, because if it's already worked out by statistical, long-running statistics, before AI, the stats, of course, people with darker complexion will be more on the left. If it's already got that as the sort of baseline assumptions on a lot of this stuff, and then I guess a more diverse, more plurality of thought among all people of all colors would sort of mess the AI up a little bit. That's interesting, that point, Christian. I want to know more about how they program this algorithm, because it's not all based on what's coming through the camera lens. Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah. It looks like they were using what they called the heat models, the heat maps, to basically, I think, track the facial structure, which also tends to lean it, are they therefore skewing a certain skeletal structure as being more like white supremacist? Is that just a way to basically tarnish a lot of people with a brush and go, you are the bad people? I think there's a danger of that actually happening. It'll be interesting how this technology rolls out. I mean, in that message I put to you is that when this rolls out potentially to video, into live CCTV, which is certainly going to be its next step of evolution of this technology. I mean, the ability to literally create lists on profiling people, just walking down the street and going, okay, 62% of those people are doing this. This is where they're going. You're able to generate mathematical algorithm models for what people are going to do. And that puts us very much on that whole cyberpunk kind of leaning for the technology of the future. And that whole technocracy watching over us at all times, monitoring our behaviors, and pre-crime potential is a scary one, certainly explored throughout pop culture for the last 100 years or so.
Yeah, the Minority Report certainly comes to mind, but you know, truth be known, they've been running these types of programs for quite a while. The Prevent strategy in Britain, they sort of identify young Muslims who could be radical later and get to them early or whatever. That actually started in like 2007, 2008, and it had the reverse effect, actually. It created more extremists because it really wound people up. You know, they felt that they're being targeted, and you know, I mean, all these things, Christian, they always have the opposite effect. Did you notice that?
Of course, yeah.
These types of programs, I mean, time and time again. So I'm like looking at this and thinking, well, the intention is they want to what? What is the intention, by the way? Does that appear anywhere in the reporting on this?
There's the extraction and the introduction, which I posted the link in the TNT chat so people can actually look at the science data behind this. But yeah, it looks like the model is generally looking at the ideology correlated with the aspects of different facial expressions, happy neutrality, morphology, attractiveness in females, heat maps. But no, not that particular kind of level. But it certainly looks at more than 5,000 people. So it has a big data set to pull from in terms of what it's looking at. it's going to be interesting tech to watch for certainly for sure.
Look at this. I look at beauty and masculinity scales. Okay. So standards of beauty and masculinity. So, you know, that memo, you know, GigaChad, have you seen GigaChad?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what about Giga? So you got a real prominent, like, lower jawbone and, you know, a good sort of, you know, manly chin. So GigaChad, I think you could just wear a GigaChad mask around Christian and it'll score you really high, but that makes you dangerous. If you've got like sort of high masculinity, that's probably going to put you in some dangerous category. So, I mean, oh my gosh, I can't believe these guys. But anyway, this is the problem with technology and government. They can only think of ways to use it against the population, generally. So yeah.
It is really about it. It's about how can you control the population with the technology that you have, while also pouring scorn over countries that are also doing a very similar thing. And I guess everyone points to the China system, but we desperately trying to replicate that, and we saw that throughout the whole COVID crisis, a way to monitor us and give us biosurveillance.
No, indeed. Yeah, the buyers don't get us started on the whole biosurveillance farrago. That's just a whole nother one. Yeah, they made a lot of headway there, but, you know, obviously we don't want to have the virology, you know, germ theory versus terrain theory debate here. We need more time to litigate that one, but that's basically what the whole biosurveillance is based on. It's based on the idea of novel viruses and using PCR tests and things like that to generate data for so-called cases. And what does all this leave us at the end of the day? All they're doing, Christian, is gathering data, you know, whether it's through CCTV cameras to figure out if somebody's far right, or whether it's PCR tests or antigen tests, whatever, to find out if they've got a virus, you know, they're COVID. And so they're gathering data. So, you know, when you give the state the ability to basically trawl all this data and information and then turn that somehow like into policy. And like, we have to do something. Look, we've got all this data and this is what the analytics are telling us. And, you know, you can see the boffins in the background, right? Like in the back rooms, like, crunching and planning all this stuff, and then briefing people like Rishi Sunak or whatever, saying, "Oh well, we're really concerned about. Look at these heat maps, Prime Minister. Look at these. We've got far right here, up in Camden Borough, and up in Manchester, we've got a hot spot up there, and we know this because of the CCTV cameras. We picked up and with 61% accuracy, we believe that there's a potential trend here because there wasn't that many before. There wasn't that last, you know, 6 months ago, there wasn't that many. Look, here's the heat maps, Prime Minister, from 6 months before. It's orange. Now they're red. We need to do something. What are we going to do? Send out spies? Well, go ahead, Christian.
I would say the threshold for that will be, well, we just saw four tall white Polish guys and they were all picked up gathering together, walking down the street to the pub. But, you know, that's a heat map. That's a definite mark there for white supremacy happening in the local community, which is predominantly, say, I don't know, Arab or, you know, Chinatown, as they kind of have them to areas. I mean, I know we're rolling towards a break in the next few minutes, but I can just see right now live happening in London right now, there's loads of protests happening in regards to Just Stop Oil. They're still stopping all the bridges there, having a lot of fun over in the world of London. And, of course, those people are being bankrolled by a rather interesting chap who's promised to give them a lot of money in the last hour. The head of Just Stop Oil has promised to give all the Just Stop Oil donations, so all the money they're going to make today in the next 24 hours, he has promised to double and give that to Just Stop Oil.
I don't understand the point of it, you know, because here's my take on this. We will roll to break in a minute. Look, it's all well and good to say we're going to shut down oil and shut down gas. And Keir Starmer, if you noticed, he's just announced that he's going to cancel North Sea drilling. We might talk about that after the break, but
yes.
Take a look at that one. And so it's all well and good, but if you don't have something to replace it that's viable, that's providing that sort of level of energy and, you know, energy per square, you know, centimeter or whatever it is, the metric is, if you don't have a viable alternative to provide the base load, then it's insanity. It's ridiculous to go pursue policies where you're just going to have a moratorium or go cold turkey on oil. It doesn't make any sense. These people are carrying iPhones around made from oil. They're wearing oil in their clothes, synthetics. Everything is plastic. Everything. They're petroleum products. So they haven't really thought this out, Christian.
No, not at all. They've obviously taken, was it 1.4 million the Labour Party have from Just Stop Oil's Dale Vince, and it's going to give them lots more as well. And obviously, whatever they raise today, crazy amounts of money being battered around in the form of trying to save the planet.
Ridiculous, patently ridiculous. And then they're what, super gluing themselves to like cars and like the pavement and stuff. Like it's like the sort of the latest. I think Extinction Rebellion just like didn't really move the dial very much, so they're packing that one up, and now they got Just Stop Oil. Like, oil is not the most evil thing on the planet, ladies and gentlemen, but you know, this is like an outgrowth of the cult of Greta Thunberg. Unfortunately, this is basically what we're dealing with.
How dare you?
But let's go to break real quick with TNT. I've got Christian James here breaking down the headlines and the stories that you need to know. All this and more on the other side. I'm Patrick Henningsen. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
I have a question for you. When is a media member a co-conspirator to a crime? Well, there were two protesters who smeared paint on the case and pedestal of the Little Dancer aged 14 sculpture at the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. back in April. They demanded that President Biden declare a climate emergency. The video of it all was posted by the Washington Post. They took the video, too. In fact, according to the Daily Caller, the Department of Justice not only charged the two climate loons with conspiracy to commit an offense against the U.S., punishable by up to 5 years in prison, but they said members of the conspiracy had alerted the Washington Post, and two reporters from the Post recorded and photographed the offense. Now, they were not charged with any crime, but if you are tipped off to a crime that's about to occur and you say nothing, aren't you part of the conspiracy of that crime? You should be, even if you work for the elitist Washington Post. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Are you finding it harder to do the things you used to do, like vacuuming or getting to appointments? If you need a bit of support at home, the Australian Government's My Aged Care is your starting point to access services. You'll find all the information and advice you need in the one place. To find out about other services, eligibility and costs, call 1800 200 422 or go to myagedcare.gov.au. Authorised by the Australian Government, Canberra, spoken by Heather Christie.
Patrick Henningsen talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is TNT, today's News Talk. We're in the final stretch of the final hour of this live broadcast. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your listenership, especially all you in the gaggle of knowledge in the TNT chat room. I see you guys in there. Thank you very much for keeping it live and real. Much appreciated. And on the line right now is Christian James. He's our research assistant for the show. And Christian, it seems like the labor leader's making a play to get some votes. Maybe he wants all those Just Stop Oil, Gen Zers, those Zoomers. He wants to get their vote for the upcoming general election. That's why he's saying this. What are the odds that he's going to like reverse course on that once he gets elected? I mean, I'm just saying, he seems like the type of guy that would do a lot of that.
You know, I've thought that actually is exactly what they're going to do, because of course you and I and the majority of the people know is that you can't really switch off the gas and the oil, but what you can do is that you can promise to give that to the young people who've been bombarded and have kind of been manipulated to believe that of course we're going through a climate change crisis, so they need to reverse course. They're going to get all these young people, going to make sure all their votes go towards the red way, and then basically say, well, we can't really do that, but we'll take your money in the meantime. We'll make your money from the unions, and we'll get your money from the Just Stop Oil head, but what we will do now is that we'll just reverse course on this because we can't deal with it any other way, and we'll probably kick it down the line a few more years. I mean, the idea of Keir Starmer banning oil and gas licenses in the North Sea, it's just a terrible idea for Britain overall, because if you don't produce it for ourselves, I mean, there's this whole situation happening in the north where we basically are selling off our cheap wind energy to the continent via Scotland. And not taking advantage of that ourselves. It's a very dodgy story up there. But what we're finding, we'll say, with the liquid, so with the gas and the oil, we have it available in abundance off our coasts. But we're going to choose to leave it there. Well, therefore, we have to import liquid natural gas, I guess, from the US, because, of course, we are their major partner right now, as they want to sell us this. They want to keep us off the Russian gas. They want to keep us off the European products and obviously make them the number one customer, us for the UK and America, at terrible environmental cost. The cost of still getting it here is still by oil and gas. It's a Of course, it doesn't make any sense because that's the world of politics.
It's a complete farce, Christian. And yeah, you outlined the whole EV farce in your article at 21stCenturyWire.com, the whole problem with the electric vehicle. Yeah, I might drop that link as well. Yeah, maybe you should drop that in the TNT chat so people can find out how the sums just don't add up when it comes to green energy, folks. It really doesn't. Christian did a really good piece on that recently. Christian, we got the breaking story of the Turkish elections. The Erdogan is victorious once again. We're gonna cut in here for a minute. We're gonna bring on our Turkish correspondent, Dr. John Arimton, just to give us a brief update. But we'll come right back to you, Christian.
That's good.
So just hold tight, Dr. John. We're gonna bring him on right now on the live link in just a moment. So just hold tight, ladies and gentlemen. Let me set that call up. I'll reconnect Christian in just a second. But Dr. John Arimton, obviously a major scholar in terms of Turkey, one of the best in the world. He's going to be joining us on the live link in just a second to give us his analysis on the recent Turkish runoff election. Seems like the Sultan has been victorious. Dr. John Arimton, joining us on the line right now. Hello, how are you doing?
Oh, hello. I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good. So, yes, a lot of anticipation. First question, what were your thoughts about the Turkish election results here? Did you think it would be closer than it was?
To be perfectly honest with you, I am surprised that Kılıçdaroğlu, the opposition candidate, got as many votes as he did, because I am surprised. I was actually surprised by the mere fact that the press, Erdogan, allowed the thing to be worn out into a second round, into a runoff. But of course, he did that for reasons that so in order to placate the opposition, to pacify the population, say, look, I am behaving in a democratic fashion. You know that I'm the winner, but let's just give it a go, just for appearances.
And so what does this mean now? So, I mean, did you think the United States was backing Kemal, the opposition candidate? Because he seemed to be saying Russian interference in the election. It was all those kind of U.S. talking points there. What do you think?
Well, some weeks ago, or maybe now some months ago, there was this talk about how this the U.S. ambassador in Ankara had a meeting with the opposition, but not with the government. So for that reason, in Turkey, there is this opinion has been moving around in the street that America is backing the opposition in order to remove the AKP from government. But as you know, Turkey, like any other Middle Eastern country, or maybe these days like any other country, is prone to conspiracy theories, and people like to think that the CIA is putting strings behind the scenes. But of course, in reality, we know very well that, for example, the 1980 military coup was a total CIA operation. On the night of the coup, the CIA Ankara chief sent a cable to DC saying, our boys did it. So in Turkey, people may very well have reason to be suspicious about these things. But as far as I can see, even though the Biden administration seems to have favored a Kılıçdaroğlu win, I don't really think that they were able to pull any strings behind the scenes to ensure that he would win. Having said that, though, I am still surprised that it had to come to a second run and to a runoff, to a second round. And I'm actually really surprised by the fact that he got as many votes as he did. So
And right now, in terms of the public, it's still pretty close, though. I mean, it's not far from 50-50 in the country. I think the final tally, if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Jean, is Erdogan 52.5%, and the opposition, Kemal, 47.4 or something. Is that about right?
Yes, it's actually a replication of the Brexit vote, 52-48.
Okay. Oh, the Brexit vote. I thought Brexit was even closer than that. Actually, I think it was 50.
You think?
Yeah, it was 51-49. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I thought it was 52-48.
But that's pretty much 50-50. So it's not like a huge mandate for Erdogan, is it?
It is not a huge mandate, but that doesn't really matter because he has been in power for so many years now, for two decades, and he'll just keep on muddling on. And as I've pointed out many months ago now, in Turkey, in archipelago Turkey, it's always a mighty matter. The Islamic faith comes first, and the reality on the ground is at best a meager second or even a third. So even though the economy is in shambles and people are suffering, they seem to be more concerned about the afterlife, about ensuring that the Turkish population can look forward to a comfortable afterlife rather than being comfortable in this life. Because, as you know, it is my contention that Erdogan's long-term goal, the AKP's long-term goal, is to transform the so-called Second Republic of Turkey into an Islamic State. And as I've pointed out in my previous articles, for all intents and purposes, it already is very much an Islamic State, in all but name. So it is my expectation that now that Erdogan has once again been able to secure the majority of the vote, now that he's able to stay put in his palace, he might just in some ways adjust the reality on the ground to the reality in appearances.
Okay. So if he had lost, if Erdogan had lost, do you think that the AKP project of the Sunnification of Turkey, turning into Islamic State from the former Kemalist Turkish Republic secular government, do you think that project, Erdogan's religious project, would have failed and been reversed potentially?
I'm afraid not, because we have to just think back to Kılıçdaroğlu's first appearance on the scene, on the public scene, which was in 2008, if I'm not mistaken. And one of the first things he did as the party leader, he replaced Deniz Baykal, the opposition leader who ensured that Erdogan was able to come to power, as I explained in my earlier work. So one of the first things he did was welcome headscarfed women into the party, into the fold. In other words, even though he himself isn't Alevi and he makes a big deal about religious tolerance and toleration, I think that the AKP project would have just continued under a different name. But in the past 20 years, Turkish society has changed so much that it's actually virtually impossible to go back to the olden days. It's back to the future now, and the future is 1922, not 2024.
And then in terms of geopolitics, this means probably continuity with the current relationship with Russia and more of a neutral type Turkey within NATO, one of the more neutral states in NATO. Does that look like that's going to continue forward?
Well, I would say so, because for one thing, Erdogan is very good at placating his outside backers, such as the emirs of Qatar or Russia, or Putin and Russia, to ensure that they invest in Turkey. Like some weeks ago, for example, Turkey was able to initiate this project of a nuclear power plant in Turkey, which was built with the help of the Russians. And at the same time, the Qatari emir gave a cash injection to Turkey as well. So in terms of new Cold War realignments, there is not going to be any difference, any change. And because that is the case, I think that's one of the reasons why the opposition, like Kılıçdaroğlu, tried to portray himself as being America's favorite. because as I tried to point out in my latest article, the word on the street in Turkey was really that the election was between Putin on the one hand and Biden on the other. Even though, of course, how much that reflected reality on the ground is an open question, but that was sort of the word on the street in Turkey.
Yeah, and a lot of this is detailed in Dr. Jean Arimton's fantastic piece on this, and it's up at 21stCenturyWire.com. The title is Turkey's Election Rerun, Back to the Future Redux, a landmark election which sets new Turkey, the more Islamic Turkey, firmly on its post-Kemalist path to an Islamic state. That's again by Dr. Jean Arimton. Dr. Jean, thank you for joining us on TNT for this update on the Turkish election. Hopefully we'll be able to follow up with this on you in the very near future.
You're welcome, and I'm looking forward to that.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. Dr. Jean Arimton, scholar of Turkish politics and geopolitics, joining us on the line there for an update on the Turkish rerun that came out in favor of Tayyip Erdogan. Of course, a lot of people were not surprised by that for various reasons, but certainly it has its sort of ramifications nonetheless. We're going to bring Christian James back onto the line just for the final stretch. I know Christian's been looking at quite a few other stories, and lo and behold, next month, the month of June, starts tomorrow, Christian. And what does the month of June signify these days? I don't know. To me, it's the beginning of summer. It's Glastonbury. It's Wimbledon. But for other people, it's something else altogether.
Yes, the month of June brings the likes of Papa John's, Sony, BMW, Pizza Hut, their logos on social media, certainly in the West, will be adorned with rainbows. It is, of course, going to be Pride Month across all the Western world, and they'll certainly be doubling down on it, just like Target has. And whether we're now going to see this year a decline in all those businesses where people are just like, we've had enough, and they'll back away from supporting those businesses that are so use Pride as their platform to put across the message. It'll be interesting to see actually what the rejection factor will be this time, considering on the back of Bud Light now tanking out even further. They've dipped to losing like another point this month. Target, I checked it earlier when I was chatting to you, they've lost 12 billion now in 14 days in terms of their market share. So I think there's going to be a bit of a, all those companies looking with those big pride flags are going to be looking at this and going, you know, we don't want a Bud Light situation.
Oh yeah, that's such a good point. I mean, I can't wait for the rainbows, the barrage of rainbows. I just honestly can't wait. But you're so correct, because 2023 is different, Christian, isn't it? Because of these boycotts, it's really killed Target and Bud Light. So look at Apple, Nike, and then every car dealership. I think there was some, I think it was Ford.
Ford, yeah.
Did you see the ad?
I did, yeah. There was these like dirty like trucks, SUVs, like cruising through the desert. And so as this wash of water comes along, it's emblazoned with a rainbow flag on the side. There's the North Face, of course. They had a rather interesting character of a drag queen style getting outside and coming out. I think it was their current platform signaling going on. I'll be interested to see what actually happens over the next month or so, whether there will actually be boycotts across a large number of companies.
Wow. So people, if they mobilize, I mean, these CEOs, they got to be thinking about this. This might be a bit of a shock coming, right? I mean, what's with the Bud Light situation? I know Target's lost billions off their share price. What's the update on Bud Light?
That's a good question, actually. I checked it a couple of days ago. Compared to the point where it was, they've certainly lost, I think it was 8 overall. I think that's just
8 billion off their market cap.
Yeah, Anheuser, of course, they are now panicking. They've obviously got rid of their CEO in terms of who was looking after the brand of Bud Light. They still haven't brought anyone in on the back of that yet. I just don't think I think they're afraid to.
Anheuser-Busch, the biggest brewery in America, tanking, and they're not going to recover. I know people that are like, they don't care if they come out with a camouflage bottle that's like military on it. They're not going to shop and buy Bud Light. And so to add insult to injury, Christian, Dylan Mulvaney, the offending article, herself, they self, themselves has turned back to become straight, apparently, because of the Trump. Yes, yes. The trauma of it. Dylan Mulvaney has announced that he's tired of being trans now. It's too much of a headache, and he wants to go back to just being a white, cis, heterosexual, Anglo-Saxon male, the most boring creature in the animal kingdom of humanity. Can you believe this, Christian?
You know, it's a really powerful thing, because ultimately he has been, you know, for all intents and purposes, a really positive figure, shall we say. Really think that people are driving behind as a character. He's probably turned a lot of people. Then they're going to switch back as well. A lot of people are going to be really confused right now.
I think he's done a lot for, you know, just basically getting people off of alcohol. You know, so the health benefits of Dylan Mulvaney, less people are drinking beer. That's probably better for people's health. But, you know, this is how we look at things. We like to have a positive spin. Thank you for that feel-good story, Christian, at the end of the program. We really appreciate that.
Good stories are what we need.
That's right. That's right. And big thank you, obviously, Christian James, our research assistant, but also Dr. John Arrington for coming in hot with the Turkish election analysis. And also in the first hour, our European political correspondent, Freddie Ponton. Amazing insights. This has been a fabulous program. But thank you guys, our listeners, for joining us, especially you guys in the TNT.